Three, two, one, and we're on. So today we're back with an English podcast. So we've been jumping around with the English and French podcast for a couple weeks now, and the response has been pretty cool. And the interview today was with Ashley Bauman, and it's quite interesting because I met Ashley training in Tulum in Mexico, and she was kind of mysterious, and you have this kind of feeling when you meet somebody and you kind of want to learn a little bit more about them and understand what they're doing in life and just like understand their path, their process. So it was a good thing because I learned a lot of things on Ashley, and it's what you're going to hear about today. She's a powerlifter. She also competed in bodybuilding competitions. She's also a badass lawyer. I think she works a lot. Don't know what level she's at, but you could stalk a...
Hey, what's up, guys? You're listening to the Smith Vibes Podcast, the only bilingual podcast in the world. I'm your host, Guillaume LaFleur-Smith.
Thanks for doing this.
Thank you for asking me to do this.
I appreciate it. So, Ashley... why don't you give us a little presentation about yourself? What do you do? Who are you? What do you do for a living?
What
are your passions?
Yeah, so I live in LA, in Santa Monica, actually, like walking distance from the beach, California, and I'm a lawyer. Mostly commercial, like business litigation and some white collar criminal defense. But my sort of before 7 a.m. and after 7 p.m. passion is bodybuilding and fitness and powerlifting. So I spend way, way too much of my free time on that stuff. but I love it. I love it. So, I've been practicing law since 2012, more or less. And not too long after that, I got pretty into bodybuilding, like late 2013.
Okay.
So... yeah, I haven't had that much time being a lawyer without also being like a bodybuilder or competitor or vice versa.
So was your, so you went, I know that you've been to Yale and to Stanford.
Yeah.
So pretty, two of the best universities on the planet.
Yeah.
That's something. How you get into that?
That's a great question. A lot of standardized tests.
Yeah.
No, I was that kid who always knew that I wanted to be a lawyer.
Right.
From the time I was really little. So I had strict parents, but, you know, the kind of parents that don't think they're strict. So, yeah. So, like, oh, can I go do whatever this weekend? And they're like, well, you just went to a party 2 weeks ago. Like, why do you need to go again? So they also had this rule about, you know, not talking back. When they say no, you don't keep arguing with them. So I realized that the best way to get my point across was to write them letters. So when I was like 7 or 8, I would just start writing letters to them, like explaining why I should be able to do whatever thing and, you know, trying to address what I thought all of their challenges to it would be. And I would leave the letters in my mom's bathroom where she got ready in the morning for work.
Nice.
And yeah, so it actually worked most of the time. And my dad just thought it was hilarious and said, you know, you should probably be a lawyer someday if you really want to try to persuade people to see things your way when there's something that you can't do or can't win. And so in my mind, that was sort of what lawyers did.
So it was like practice over time just like brought you there. So it was something you already had in your blood when you started school, maybe?
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
I did like a couple of other things before law school though. So like in the States, the way our system is set up is it's 4 years of bachelor, and then, you know, no matter what you want to study later, you have to do 4 years of bachelor, and then you usually reapply separately to go to grad school.
Okay.
So I worked for 3 years in fashion after college, after my undergrad. And I worked for Abercrombie & Fitch's corporate office.
Awesome.
It was, yeah, really different. I was a buyer and a product developer in Ohio. And then after a few years of that, it was definitely time to move on. So I went to law school and 3 years of law school, and then decided I wanted to stay in California.
Because, yeah, because Stanford is in San... Is it in San Francisco?
San Diego? It's near San Francisco.
Right.
Yeah, it's okay. Palo Alto.
Okay.
So, yeah, so it was... I mean, I love California. Like, the weather is amazing. And when I was picking law schools, so weather.com at the time, this was... I applied a little early before I went. So this must have been, like, 2007. But weather.com had this function where you could compare locations and see what the weather was like. I swear to God. So you could do like temperature, rainfall, all these different metrics. And I did that with all the schools I was looking at. And I was like, okay, if I get into Stanford or Berkeley, I'm not looking anywhere else. Like those are the only options because, you know, weather.
Where's Berkeley?
It's in the Bay Area also.
Okay.
So it's like, yeah, like near Oakland,
okay,
like East Bay, San Francisco, yeah, Bay.
So Canada was out of the question.
Right. I grew up 20 minutes from Canada.
Exactly.
which is close enough to know that it was going to be colder than where I was coming from. So definitely out of the question.
So you studied a long time, and so you only started pretty much your fitness journey after school. So you never really worked out during school, like, or like even competitive sports or something like that?
I kind of always played sports. I was a mediocre athlete in high school.
Okay.
But yeah, like always active, like volleyball and cross country and soccer. I was terrible at soccer, really bad, but I liked it. And then in college I discovered rugby and I loved it. Like it was the first sport that like really clicked for me. And I was like pretty good at it, and yeah, so I played that, and I lifted weights, but you know, I didn't realize at the time that I had no idea what I was doing.
Right. So you're just doing it because for the sake of doing it.
Yeah, just for. I mean, it was, you know, it was fun. I liked being in the gym, and I liked running, so I would actually run quite a bit, like you know, 5 to 10 mile runs and stuff like that. But I don't know how I managed to actually do that much activity in a day when I think back.
Yeah.
Because now I would just be like laid out after, you know, 4 hours of exercise. But yeah, I'd never really done it seriously until after school and once I started with lawyering, all that stuff.
What made that click? Because I mean, right now that we're talking, you're pretty competitive in what you do.
Yeah, it's weird. So... I didn't realize this at the time, but I was working for a big law firm at the time, a big international firm, and we just finished this crazy trial, and it was like working constantly in the beginning for a couple months. We were living out of a hotel in our own city because we were in the office so much, and work hours were like 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. and
retarded.
Yeah, it was totally nuts. And so toward the end of that, we were almost done with trial and wrapping up, and I was exhausted and hating my life. And then my mom actually died, like right sort of near the end, with I would say in the last month of trial. And so I didn't think about it then, but once trial was over and I had free time, it was probably like just needing to throw myself into something because I wasn't working that much. They basically said, you know, you guys have essentially done more than a year's worth of work already, so just slow down. And so I had all this free time and I probably didn't want to be in my own head. So I just started training a ton and I got picked up by a trainer at this gym. She saw me lifting and said, you know, have you ever thought about doing fitness competitions? I think maybe you could be good at it. And she told me about the WBFF. It's one organization that she competed with, and ended up training me for my first show in April. I think I started with her around Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving. So like late November 2013.
So fitness was actually the first step into the fitness culture.
Yeah. And it was like this whole world where I thought about it before. Like I always thought that like really muscular fit bodies were so impressive. And I once talked to a trainer when I was at Stanford about doing a few sessions and maybe like considering bodybuilding, but he was so like chauvinistic and condescending about it. And he asked me if I had brothers and just said he was curious about where the interest was coming from. And you know, all of his questions were sort of tailored toward like proving to me that I didn't really want to do what I was saying I wanted. Like, oh, well, you're going to have to get this size if you want to do it. What do you think about your legs looking like this? And so that just sort of turned me off. But yeah, the coach was great. She really changed the way I thought about sort of shaping my body and seeing it more constructively and positively, which was cool.
It wasn't only about building muscle. It was maybe more about like what all the steps that need to be taken to bring you there.
Yeah, I think so. I think especially for women, we tend to, like, I've never been like a thin person, and I've always had, you know, like body issues about being overweight or just, you know, feeling like I looked fat and that sort of thing. And it was cool to think about changing my body in like more of a constructive, positive way. Like, instead of thinking about fixing something that was wrong, thinking about like almost like a project, like building these things or working on rear delts or making, you know, this part more symmetrical. And it was kind of fun. Like, it, there was a little more agency in it, rather than feeling like, you know, it was, there's something had been done to you that you needed to fix. So yeah, I love that part of it, and the intensity, and just sort of seeing the changes week after week. Yeah, that, so it was
quite. So from the start, where you were pretty much already like all into it and pretty consistent with what needed to be done? And
I think so. And like, I mean, part of the reason, so not to get too personal, but I have like had eating disorders, like I think a lot of girls who compete. And even at the time when I first started training, I was dealing with a lot of food disorders and disordered eating and issues. And so for me, bodybuilding actually helped a lot because, really? Yeah, which was bizarre.
Because those disorders were like before bodybuilding happened, or it was more like whatever the people were telling you in the industry?
It was sort of, it was pre-existing. So like my first coach actually had no idea. And I think I didn't even talk to her about it until later, maybe like a couple of years after. But I think a lot of us have control issues with our food and with our bodies and our lives and everything else. And so bodybuilding was almost like a way to channel that control with nutrition and everything else. And, you know, it's when you have a plan and you have a program, if you're a rules person, it's easy to stick to your rules and to sort of make that your focus. I don't think that's the healthiest way to do it for a lot of people. I don't think it works for everyone.
No, for sure.
For some people, it can definitely be a lot more triggering.
Yeah.
But that sort of helped me, as long as I was like prepping for something. Long term, it had some sort of negative effects just because of the way I dieted for my first show, not really knowing any better and being a newbie. But mentally, it was really, really great for me at that time.
Because there's a big mentality of people like, well, I know in bodybuilding, the class is just to like cut all the carbs and just like eat the protein and a bit of veggies, and that's like quote unquote eating clean, but it actually isn't.
Yeah, and it just makes you miserable.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's the one thing that I found to be the hardest. I didn't have a crazy diet. I was always more of like a 40-40-20, like protein, carbs, fat. So it was never, you know, cut all the carbs, don't eat anything that you would actually ever want to have in a meal. But, you know, especially when you're kind of dieting hard and none of your friends are in that lifestyle. Like, my friends are all lawyers and, you know, people who did similar things to me professionally. And so I found myself saying no to so many things, like social events, and I don't know, you don't want to go out to dinner or to a party or to whatever because you don't want to be that person with the Tupperware, but at the same time, you don't want to eat what's there, and you don't want to starve for 4 hours, so it was easier to just say no.
Right.
And
it's always an easy answer in that kind of situation. Yeah.
But then you miss out on so much, and I wish that I'd had the mindset then that I have now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you say no too much, it just becomes your default, and then it becomes a lot harder to say yes. And I think I sort of missed out on a lot of cool social opportunities with my friends, and I don't know.
Well, also in your field of work, you're always with the same type of people, and it's probably a need for you to like go and socialize with other type of people. Whereas other works, it is like more of a like mix and match.
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't know. It's nice to have a foot in both worlds.
Yeah,
sort of.
Absolutely.
Which comes with its own challenges. Because I remember at one point I just felt like, you know, my friends who were into fitness didn't quite understand. Like, no, I'm not a workaholic, but I actually have a deadline for a court filing, and it's going to take me 16 hours to finish this project. And if I don't do it, then like, my client is screwed. So like, yes, I'd rather be doing something besides being in the office till 11, or yes, I'd love to get 8 hours of sleep tonight, but you know, it's not like me just deciding not to do it. And then by the same token, my friends at work wouldn't understand, oh gosh, like going to lunches, this is the worst. When you'd go to a lunch and something amazing that smelled like garlicky and buttery and delicious is on the table, and you know, I've ordered my like chicken breast with nothing on it and green salad because I really want to be social now and like just hang out, and someone's like, yeah, but wouldn't you rather eat this, and they put like buffalo wings in front of you or something crazy. It's like, well, of course, all things being equal, I'd rather eat, you know, something.
Yeah.
Besides like this dry salad with mustard on it, but like, you know, like it's self-imposed. I made a choice, like it's a decision, I have a goal, whatever. But yeah, they just like couldn't wrap their minds around it. So it's fun to have both worlds, but it presents some challenges, I think.
Like the challenge of also having all those meals from that 7 to 7 that you're working in.
Totally. Like even now, food prep is probably one of the most time consuming things I do besides like actually training and work.
How long does it take you?
I usually devote probably a half day on Sunday to just getting everything ready. So it's like prepping all my protein for the week. I'll try to chop like all my veggies, cook and steam as much as I can of that in my starches. I found it's a lot less daunting if I have like, especially for veggies, have everything already ready and prepped in Tupperware.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it takes 2 minutes to steam it if you want to eat it fresh. So yeah, Sunday is like a half day, and then I'll usually like in the mornings take 20 minutes putting everything together, try to make dinner at home if I can from stuff I have. So on average, probably like 10 hours a week on food prep.
Really? Just, 10 hours?
I would say if I really counted everything up, because, yeah, probably 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening. No, maybe, yeah, that sounds about right. And then, like,
are you good with a variety of the different meals that you eat during your week for not getting bored?
I think that's why it takes me so long, right? Because I'm cooking, like, 30 different things so that I can put meals together and not get bored and not, not feel the need to eat something off plan if I have enough things that I enjoy eating.
Yeah.
But you know, and logging your food, that's the other thing. Like if you log your macros, like it's not a lot, but that's, you know, another 5, 10, 15 minutes a day you're spending adjusting and planning everything.
Are you pretty good with that, like getting to your goal, a target every day? Or
yeah, I try to be. So I've been working with Michelle McDonald, who's really good macro planner, but also good about setting realistic targets that are in line with what my goals are.
Right.
Like changing them and checking in and whatever. And also just doing regular check-ins with her as a nutrition coach. Like I know she's going to be on me if things are off for more than 1 or 2 days. Like, right. Hey, what happened here? Like, did you have a stroke? Because I don't see anything entered for 3 days.
Right.
So that's super helpful. And just like,
what's the easiest to get to? Is it your protein, your carbs, or your fats?
Protein is the easiest, I would say, for me.
Lucky.
Because I eat 5 meals a day. And so like for people who only do 3 meals a day, I've seen that they tend to struggle with getting to more than like 150 grams of protein or 130.
Yeah.
It's a lot, you know. But if you do 5 meals a day, it's pretty easy to just have some sort of heavy protein source in every meal. my fats are usually pretty low. Like the worst of my diet, I've been down to 25 grams a day.
Wow. So you don't cook with any sources of fat?
I use cooking spray. That's about it. There's like high days when I'm maybe in the 40s. And then I can like, you know, put in a couple grams of butter goes a long way
when your sure.
fats are low. But yeah, so fats are hard. It's so hard to eat out when your fat's really low. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you go to a restaurant, everything's cooked in oil. Like even a salad. There's a place I love in LA, Mendocino Farms. There's a salad I used to always get, and I try to like estimate what I thought it was. Turns out I was pretty close on the salad, but like the macros are all screwed. It's like 30 grams of fat or something crazy.
Yeah,
like
some people think of eating salads sometimes is like super low in calories, but it's actually, you can get up to 500 calories easily just with the fats.
Easily.
Yeah.
And like the micronutrients are great. So
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Still, yeah, like on balance better than eating, you know, a candy bar, but it's not. I mean, you're not going to lose weight eating three salads out a day. It's just, unfortunately.
With all those good sesame sauces and stuff like that.
Oh, so good. Like, there's a reason some of that stuff tastes so good.
Absolutely.
I don't know. So it's worth it every once in a while.
But, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, what about you? What's your nutrition protocol these days?
It's kind of, like, always up and down. I always like to once in a while, I'll count macros just to like reset when I find like that I'll be a little too heavy, then I'll just like count, and then that way it sets me up, it sets the tone for the next couple of weeks, so that way I'll kind of like, okay, this is what's about this number of proteins and whatever, so I'm not under eating and I'm not overeating, but like sometimes I just like forget.
So it like recalibrates you sort
of. Exactly. Yeah. Because I can't I don't like doing it, and my goals aren't towards any like bodybuilding competition, so my fat percentage isn't what's needed. But if I'm getting heavier, it's not good either if it's not muscle mass, right? So how do you like across food, like time, that's a lot of time when you're with all the work you have, when do you actually train a day? Like, do you train two times a day, or do you...
So the last maybe 6 weeks or so, I've been doing two-a-days, and I'll sometimes do them when I can. Work's been a little less hectic lately, but my standard, so I train at 5 a.m.
Okay.
Usually 5 to 7 is my sort of dedicated block, because it's the one time of day when no one's going to bug me.
Yeah.
I don't have to respond to work emails. It's just like my time for me and my trainer if I'm with him. But yeah, so I was prepping for a photo shoot coming down to Tulum for this retreat, and I wanted to just drop a little bit of body fat and have a goal to work towards. That was really the thing, because I'm not competing now, so I needed just something to work towards. So I was doing, toward the end, maybe like 45 to 50 minutes of cardio a day, like cardio or HIIT. And that could not be done immediately after my morning workout.
Right. It's just too much. It's just too much drain from all those lifting weights, right?
Especially like on a leg day. Like I do HIIT on leg day, and there's just no way I can go through, you know, HIIT and cardio after squatting or deadlifting. So that was a little bit challenging, and it's really hard when work is busy. Like, I'm never going to knock anyone for legitimately not having time to work out, because sometimes people just don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I know personally there have been times when I've had to make the trade-off between getting sleep and training, and I've usually chosen training, but I don't think that's necessarily the smartest choice.
Not all the time.
If you're getting 5 hours of sleep 5 nights in a row because you're so busy, like maybe you should take a day off and, you know, sort of reset. So.
But did you set up also your schedule to be able to train close to where you work and like set yourself for success in those kind of ways?
That's the most helpful thing. So I actually work out at 3 different gyms at home. I go to Equinox. That's my sort of like main gym. So I have my neighborhood one in Santa Monica where I am. I have one near my job that's like a 5-minute walk from my office. And then my trainer is actually at another gym that's like driving distance. So that's where I am from 5 to 7. 3 days a week I'm with him, usually 2 or 3 days. So yeah, that makes a huge difference, especially on the weekends, being able to do 2 a days and walk to my gym back and forth. And it's just not as stressful as having to get in your car every time.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's huge. And also just having like friends there and having a community and looking forward to spending my Saturday morning at the gym.
Yeah.
Makes a big difference.
I think it's cool though, changing gyms. I think that people underestimate how working out in different locations can actually be more beneficial in terms of motivation, because you see different faces, you're in different environments, and you're not as involved maybe into each community. So well, it has its defaults for mm-hmm. sure, but I feel like on the motivation side for certain people, that's kind of like.
Totally. Like some days you're like, you know, I have an hour. I need to get in. Yeah. I need to get out. I need to hit this really hard. I don't want to talk to anyone.
Yeah.
Headphones on. And it's nice to have a place where you can do that. And yeah. Not, you know, feel like you have to be the mayor and greet everybody and risk upsetting your friends if you don't. But, you know, like it's expensive too.
Yeah. That's the other thing.
It's, if you could make it work, it's great. But I get why people don't do it, because it's like, it's a little bit silly. I don't have, you know, I don't have kids. Yeah. I don't have an expensive mortgage or things like that that are real limiting factors. But I can't imagine like two people with children and, you know, expenses in school and all these things, both having like 3 gym memberships,
because
it's easy.
yeah.
So it's like,
but it is part of your priorities as well. Like,
totally.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, and that's exactly it, right? It's like we all choose the things that we want to devote our time and our lives and our energy to.
Yeah.
And we find a way to make it work and work around that. And, you know, like right now, this is a priority for me. Like maybe, hopefully, in 15 years, I won't think that I need to be counting macros every day and logging everything and whatever app I'm using. But right now, it works. I enjoy it. It's good for right now.
So you said you weren't competing anymore. I mean, is it because in this part of the year you're leading up to a future competition? When's the last time you competed?
I haven't competed in a long time. My last show was 2015, August of 2015.
Okay.
I did a natural bodybuilding show.
Yeah.
And it was good. I got my pro card there in figure, but after that, I just had such a tough time, like a lot of women do afterward, with trying to like keep your weight down and keep the body fat off after you've been dieting so much. And I just thought, okay, I need to take a break from it.
Are you still pro even though that it's been so long?
I can still do it. I would have to renew my card.
Right.
I had a pro card with WBFF, but because I then competed in another org, I would have to re-qualify if I wanted to compete with them again. But I actually got into powerlifting for a while.
Yeah, I saw that.
So that was fun. I did one powerlifting meet, and it's way more stressful. It's so much more stressful, because when you're doing bodybuilding, it's like you already know what you're bringing to the stage.
Like, yeah, because it's like a little adding little weights to the bar every time, right?
Well, it's more like, I mean, with bodybuilding, you've already done all the work, right? Yeah. Like, so when you get on stage, it's like the package is there. You know what you have. The only wild card is what the judges are going to think. But with powerlifting, you could have put in all the work and you could have, you know, done everything to set yourself up for success. But you have a tiny little misstep and
you just don't peak at the right time.
Yeah. Or like, I don't know, you just like footfall or you step the wrong way or you put the bar back too soon. There's a million things. So I found it so nerve-wracking to the point that I didn't even enjoy it. I was like, I had a really good first meet. It went really well, but I was shaking the whole time. And it was one of the more stressful things I've done in my life, I have to say. I had like, the weekend I did my meet, it was in Vegas. And I had an oral argument in federal court that I was supposed to give that following Monday. And I hadn't even, I shouldn't say this because work wouldn't be happy, but I hadn't even prepped for the argument. I figured I would do it on the plane back home. I'm like, oh, that'll be fine. It's not a big deal. But this meet, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was shaking and anxious and like, I don't know, just seeing the difference of the things that stress us out is kind of funny. So, I don't know. I love powerlifting, but I think I might be a gym PR person for now.
For now. Yeah, I think it takes experience and practice over time, that's for sure. Are you juggling through, like, oh, okay, I need to kind of make a choice, so right now I'm doing both? Or do you find that training for powerlifting still gives you the same type of program or process to get to bodybuilding competitions?
That's a good question. I think, so I was actually toying with the idea this weekend, being inspired by all these women who compete who are around in Tulum. I was toying with the idea of whether I'd want to do another bodybuilding competition. And I think that trying to do bodybuilding and powerlifting training at the same time, neither one's going to be 100% ideal.
Yeah.
It's totally possible.
Well, now a lot more powerlifters look like bodybuilders than before.
Definitely. And I think, like, I don't think it's impossible. I think it's more a question of, like, okay, if I were going to do powerlifting optimally and I was going to do everything in the way that would really set me up for the most success on the platform, what kind of protocol would I follow? And the reality is, for that, it would probably be a little less volume, a little less cardio, a little more food than, you know, if I'm also looking at bodybuilding and trying to maintain a certain physique at the same time. So things like, you know, doing a little extra cardio, even though it might hurt my recovery somewhat, or adding in more accessories than what's really necessary for powerlifting, because it's going to help round out those areas of my physique that need a little more work. And keep me looking better aesthetically in the off season. And then by the same token, for bodybuilding, like, if I were just doing bodybuilding, maybe I'd be doing more cardio. Maybe my diet would be a little more aggressive. Maybe I'd be focusing more on higher reps and hypertrophy and not doing, you know, a 5x5 squat every Monday just because I love it and can't let go of it. Yeah, it's I found that with keeping nutrition on point, especially, and keeping just a low baseline of cardio at least, it's a lot easier to meld the two a little bit, and it's fun. It's nice to mix up the training.
And now that you're maybe a bit more knowledgeable of like what you're doing, do you think that it's still as beneficial, like, to being like I know, you know, but I just want to maybe explain why you find it as important to be like as coached personally, get like a specific program for yourself, and having other eyes on you rather than your own, because you're already probably busy doing other things.
Yeah, it's for me, the single most helpful thing is having an objective eye there.
Yeah.
And another thing is, like, you know, I love fitness and I think I've learned a lot, but I know that I don't know nearly as much as most of the coaches I've worked with, who they've lived it and they've breathed it, and they also have a much larger sample size of performances and bodies and programs that they've seen outside of just mine.
They're very coachable.
Yeah, it's great. Like, I mean, like, I have a sample size of one versus the coaches I work with who have sample sizes of, you know, hundreds of clients, right, they've worked with, yeah, and programming and, you know, I found great people. I have always had trainers who, especially my current trainer, he's more excited about my PRs than I am. And he remembers each week, you know, like, okay, well, you should probably use 50s this week, because remember last week on that last set you did 45s and you said that it was a little bit light. And I'm like, no, I don't remember that.
But yeah, that's something that trainers remember, reps and, like, yeah. That's a thing.
And people who are excited about teaching you and excited about learning, and coaches who don't see questions as a challenge,
yeah,
but see them as an opportunity to sort of share what they know and make the sport better and make
absolutely
the community better. But the objective eye is I think also really important, because there's, you know, whenever, if we're competitive or if we're driving really hard, there's always an emotional component and this sort of like subjective component where you can't get out of your own head about things. And it's great to have someone who makes you take that step outside of yourself and like look at your progress or look at your lack of progress because of the choices you've been making, or, you know, even things as little as when you feel fatigued and you're mentally not there and your set feels horrific and you're like, man, that was so heavy, I need to go down. And then your coach shows you the video that he or she took and it looks like it's, you know, a 6 out of 10 RPE. And you're like, all right, I need to stop whining, get out of my head and just like get it done. Whereas if you'd been alone, you probably would have, you know, gone down 5 pounds and not gotten through it. But yeah, just taking your ego out of it. Like, I need to know that however much I've learned, I really don't know as much as the professional people that I'm working with who eat, sleep, breathe, love this.
And it's a big thing in California, too. I think that a lot of coaches go out there, and I think there's a big movement of strength and conditioning out there. A lot of information comes from there as well.
Yes, and so much more scientific learning now, like getting away from the bro science. You know,
bodybuilding.com or the magazines.
It's great. Like I love my current trainer, and I probably have talked about him way too many times, but you know, there's been so many times when I ask him a question about something and he's like, you know, I'm not totally sure, anecdotally I think it's this, but let me find out. And he'll, you know, go and research papers on it and find some academic studies and come back to me with an answer. Which, just like the humility in doing that and being fine with saying, I don't know, but like we should both find out.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic. So, the science-based approach is huge, and especially for women, because, you know, men have been the standard for so long, and especially in sports and sports nutrition and bodybuilding, but generally in science and in medicine. And like the male body is the default, even though we know that women's bodies react differently in so many ways.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because at the same time, women's and men, in my opinion, can train the same way. Obviously some things happen differently, but there's so many trainers out there that are just trying to sell these women's only program or men's only program, and like that's like, really, is this really happening in 2019?
Yes. Especially when it's like, I mean, and I get it when it's certain things, like in general women can tolerate more volume and recovery,
like I know that for like many studies that women recover faster on deadlifts than men, just because of the proportion of percentage weights per body weight.
That makes sense.
Because the guy is going to lift maybe a little bit heavier, so the impact that it gives on his body needs maybe a little longer time than a woman. So it's just like knowing those little things.
And that makes perfect sense, but I think you're absolutely right that it doesn't mean that like your women's only program should be just like glute thrust and squats.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, I don't know. Yeah, it makes me so upset when I see women working with trainers who like are squatting, you know, 1.5 times body weight but can't do a single push-up.
Right. And like at the same, it's actually like some men with no experience shouldn't do the same program that another man does that is his experience. So like that doesn't work out. That doesn't make sense. That's why everything should be kind of individualized for that. But
yes. Yeah. I know, and I know we're both like preaching to the choir, but all of these like personalized programs that are really just cookie cutter, it's just, often a waste of money. But you know, what can you do?
So what's next? So what's your next goal for the upcoming months or the upcoming year, maybe?
Good question. I'm trying to figure that out. I have some performance based goals that I want to hit this year. So I really would love this year to do a 225 bench press.
Wow, that's impressive.
That's my goal.
How much are you right now?
The most I've done, I think, is maybe 210 or 205. I'd have to look back, but I haven't really done a, you know, properly kind of like deloaded and peaked single in a long time.
So is that 1 1/4 body weight
for you? A little more. I think I weigh like maybe 127.
Okay.
So it'd be like 1.8 maybe, something like that.
Yeah. Because right? It's funny because like about 4 hours before this podcast, I was calculating all the numbers I wanted to hit. And it was like those like double squat, double plus 1/4 deadlift and 1 1/4 bench. And at 175, I'm at 245.
Okay.
Bench press. So that's, so you're 130, 127?
Yeah, but like 127, 128.
Yeah, so that makes, yeah, so it's a little bit over.
Yeah, but I hit a volume PR today, so I think I'm there. I hit 175 for 5, and that's
on the bench.
Yeah, nice. It was like an 8.5 RPE maybe.
Yeah.
So that was, that's good. I think I can get there. Deadlift, I would love to do, I don't know, maybe like, if I could hit 440 for a sumo, that would be exciting. And my squat has been really crappy ever since I started dieting. So
really, oh really? It's just your energy is slower?
I don't know. You know, it's always been my weakest lift. So yeah. I think it takes sort of the most the most energy. I have to recruit the most for it. And when I diet, it plummets before everything else. Maybe it's more of a leverage lift for me too. I don't know. But I've been struggling to get anywhere near 300. So if I could just get back to like a solid, smooth 300-pound squat, I would be very happy.
A little bit more than double body weight, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I've done a little heavier before, but when my body weight was way heavier. So Wilkes-wise, I think that would be good.
Did you see Steffi Cohen's deadlift recently?
What was it?
I don't know, like 575 or something like that.
She's insane.
Or 605 or something like that. Yeah, crazy. Her squat was like 405 for one, I think. It's just like retarded.
Yeah, I can't even wrap my mind around that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think I could move the bar with that much weight on it unless I were rolling it.
Yeah, but that's heavy. That's a full-time job, though.
True.
Yeah.
True. Yeah, I don't know how people do it. I mean, I think you just have to be focused on that. Too, you know, like there probably can't be any like physique competitions thrown in there. And
yeah, do you think you would still train the same if you didn't work, or you really enjoy working, like you enjoy your job, that this is also a priority? But
so that's a good question. I really like my job quite a bit, but I wanted to travel more. That's one of my big passions and something I love and my goal. So I'm going to be 35 this summer and I want to see 40 countries by the time I'm 40. So
that's awesome.
It's great. And I love gym tourism too. That's a whole other can of worms. But, so I actually went on reduced time at work a couple of months ago, and this year I'm working 75% time. So really I can have more vacations. So when I'm in the office, I'm still like full time working my, you know, long hours, normal schedule. But I ideally will be able to travel a little more frequently and get away and see more and deadlift in more
countries. More countries. Exactly. Deadlift in 40 countries. That's the goal.
That would be the goal. That would be amazing.
Deadlift, deadlift for 400 in every gym across the world.
It's like my friends always make fun of me when they see my Instagram photos because it's mostly like gym logs, and then occasionally it'll pop up in like a gym in Sweden or, you know, Latvia or somewhere random, Israel. And they're like, aren't you supposed to be on vacation? But it's so fun, you know. It's like
exactly. I'm in vacation. I want to train double times than what I'll do back home.
And you walk into a gym and it suddenly just feels like home, you know?
Yeah.
So
where's your next stop?
So at the end of June, beginning of July, I'm gonna go to Iceland. I've never been there. So I'm super excited. And then I'm gonna go to Stockholm, and I go there pretty much every year.
Oh yeah?
It's a cool city.
It's a good time of the year to go.
Yeah, the weather's beautiful in the summer. It's warm. People are happy and outside, and have shed their winter clothes, and it's light outside till almost midnight. So it's great. And for me, it's like a more chill, kind of relaxed place to go, because I've been there so many times, I don't have to do the touristy things.
Yeah.
Just like see my friends, go to the gym, drink good coffee, you know, maybe, I don't know, meet up with random people I meet while I'm traveling. So it's a good time.
Yeah, it's more, makes you feel a bit more like home, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's cool to have a city that's like a second change of scenery kind of place. Like, I did a working vacation there last year where I just went for 5 days or something, took my laptop with me, and stayed in a friend's apartment and just, you know, had a change of pace. So it's good.
Nice. And after Iceland, where would you like to go?
There's so many places on my list. Let's see. So I've been wanting to go to Colombia forever. So I might go there on the sort of like warm, exciting place front. I was in Portugal earlier this year, but I want to go back because I realized that 10 days there was not enough.
Really?
Oh my God. It was fantastic. It's like the food is really good. The cities are beautiful. I didn't get to go to the beach very much, which is also great. They have the most delicious sea bass I've ever had in my life, and I ate it pretty much every day.
When you do all these traveling, do you obviously you train when you go there, but do you count your food when you go there too, or that's kind of like your week off?
So it depends. I usually try to still be pretty controlled, because for me it's way easier to put on weight and fat than it is to get it off. And so as much as I would love to just like forget it all for 2 weeks, I don't want to have to pay for it for the next like 4 months.
Exactly.
So I usually try to stick to like sort of set guidelines. Like, I'll try to stay within whatever my normal amount of calories are. Try to make sure that I'm still getting close to my protein.
Yeah, protein's hard when you travel. That's it's like the hardest so thing. Hard. Everything else is easy.
Yeah, you can get snacks anywhere. Protein's, I think, the most difficult. So I normally bring stuff with me. Like, I'll bring protein packets. I'll normally bring like easy stuff like jerky or packets of like tuna and stuff. And that's my snack during the day when I'm walking around or doing whatever.
And even in restaurants, they don't put as much meat or
not at all
fish that you need.
And then like when you're starving after a day of touristing, the first thing you want to do is eat all the bread that they set on the table.
Oh yeah. And the ice cream all everywhere. Yes.
Oh yeah. But I find it more difficult to hit macros, so I focus more on calories, getting, you know, multiple meals, still getting 4 meals or so, and trying to get as much protein as I can. But, you know, it's usually worth it. You can always skimp a little bit on breakfast so that you can have room for this, like, amazing, delicious lunch or dinner. And I'm actually going to Mexico City when I leave Tulum tomorrow for 4 or 5 days. And they have some of the like top 20 restaurants in the world.
Yes.
And I booked a couple of those.
Oh, so yeah.
I will be practicing this plan of apportioning my calories accordingly.
I did it. I did one Michelin star restaurant in Bangkok.
Ooh.
In March. And it was a Michelin star restaurant, and it was just like the cheapest food ever too. So, and what did I have? I had a steak with a papaya salad, and like pork rolls, just like a lot of meat. It was like a barbecue place, pretty much.
It's delicious.
And it took me 30 minutes to eat, so spicy it was. Yeah, I had to like eat a piece, drink water, wait, and then eat. It was just like the spiciest food ever.
Did you understand why it got the Michelin star?
Yeah, it was very good. It was just like, but you wouldn't expect it to taste like that. It's kind of like always a special kind of feel. Yeah.
Now, I love good food. That's sort of the hardest thing about dieting, or even just being really controlled about your nutrition.
Yeah.
Because like we were saying, especially with fat, it's so hard to eat out and not have just like, you know, massive amounts of it, even if you're, you know, you can ask them to some extent to like not cook things in oil or whatever, but
it's that little discipline that is kind of like considered probably by many, by even by yourself, that it's hard to do. It's a sacrifice, and but on the long term, you're so much better in your skin, and you're so much more going towards your goals that's the biggest reward.
I completely agree. And like, you know, you don't have to say no all the time.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
Yeah.
So, that was my biggest goal with this sort of most recent round of nutrition and dieting down, was to find a way to incorporate it into my normal life. Try to like reverse diet back up, get my food and metabolic capacity high enough that I could have those meals out with my friends or on vacation or, you know, go to a party or that sort of thing and not have to worry about how it's going to impact my training and nutrition for the next week or 2 weeks, because everything's sort of at a good enough place that there's room for it. So it's been good.
Quite a journey. Quite a journey. Let's wrap this up. Ashley, I have 4 amazing questions, and you probably already answered them across. But so if you would have to move countries, in a dream country you would need to move at for the rest of your life, and it can't be the one you're in, where would that be?
Okay. Wow. The rest of my life. Oh, this is hard. I can't pick 2? Can I pick 2?
Yeah, you can pick 2. Okay. Let's do it.
All right. So I would switch seasons, but it would be Sweden in the summer and then Australia in the winter. And the reason why is because I think Sweden would be ideal in terms of things like social welfare and also just like nice people, high standard of living, easy place to live, really good gyms, and lots of Olego plates everywhere. But the weather and the darkness in the winter is just unbearable. So couldn't do it year round. Australia would really just be for the weather and the beaches and people who are super friendly.
Australia's a bit like California for...
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's the closest I could get to like where I live in Santa Monica without being in the U.S.
Yeah. Would you come to Tulum, to Mexico?
Oh my God, I love it here.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to come back.
Yeah.
I was here once before, and I think I will probably be back hopefully later this year.
For training? When you came back? When you came for the first time?
The first time was actually for my 33rd birthday.
Nice.
So on a whim, we just booked it and came here, and it was beautiful and warm. And this time is for a fitness retreat.
Yeah.
It's the best vacation I've ever had.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely coming back.
Nice. If you'd have one meal for the rest of your life, like every meal of the day would be that, what would that be?
It would be some sort of salad, if I could have different types of salad. Just because you can load it up with so many things, and I never get bored with it. I could eat salads for the rest of my life.
Like poke bowls or something like that.
I don't know. I just love like vegetables, like beets, anything with like beets or like colorful vegetables, carrots, sprouts, and then you get like, chestnuts are delicious, dried fruit.
You just mix it around.
Oh my God, everything. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but you have to chop it. It's not a real salad if you have giant bites of everything and you don't get all the flavors together. So people need to chop their salads.
And chew their food.
And chew their food.
Chew your food 30 times every bite.
That's a little intense.
Yeah, that's what recommended though. 25 bites.
Maybe 25,
30. I'm like at 5. Or 1.
Do you ever actually count your
No. Okay. I already tried once. And then every once in a while I'll do it, and then after like 3 or 4 bites I'll just be like, I'm hungry.
I'm going to try it at dinner tonight because I want to make the most of these calories. We're going out to this really great place in Tulum, and I'm going to get octopus, so I might have to chew it 30 times.
Are you going to Abitas?
Yes.
Yes.
Is it worth it?
The octopus is amazing there. Yeah, it's like pretty, yeah.
Can't wait.
The octopus is really good. There's also great meat. All the meats are, it's awesome food, yeah. All right, if we have, sorry about that. That was weird. Who is your favorite male athlete of all times and why? I asked the males at the women and the women's at the males.
I know, that's a tough question. Favorite of all time? Okay, this is going to sound really cliche, but I want you to not judge me. So try to not judge me.
I won't judge you. I might judge you a bit.
Okay, just not out loud. Okay. In your head's totally fine. Muhammad Ali, I'd say probably. Really more because of his sort of political leanings and the fact that, like, he was one of the first athletes to really use sports as a platform to elevate a lot of other issues and, you know, a lot of other social issues, and to realize a unique position that he occupied to be able to do that and set an example.
Yeah.
And yeah, so super impressive guy. And, you know, his daughter's
legend.
Yeah. The greatest.
Yeah.
G-O-A-T.
Yeah, like, even nowadays, you'll see his videos everywhere.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. He's super impressive. I was also thinking Jack Johnson, too. But,
who's Jack Johnson?
So he was a boxer in the early 20th century, and he was, I believe he was the first black heavyweight boxer. But he had a really rough life because he was obviously still living through Jim Crow segregation in the U.S. And he was convicted of crimes and sent to prison for having, like, white girlfriends at the time and going over state lines. And as much as I'm not a fan of President Donald Trump, sorry to get political, but it is what it is, he recently pardoned Jack Johnson for those convictions, which was actually, like, you know, a decision he made that I supported.
Nice. So, I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's he has a very interesting backstory.
They can do that across time.
Yeah, presidents can pardon, I believe, anyone who is convicted of any federal crime at any time. So he did a posthumous pardon.
So that means there's probably somebody behind that was kind of, like, in court for that pardon, even though that he's not alive anymore?
So people actually petition presidents. It's kind of a crazy story. Like, there's also been people like Kim Kardashian and Kanye West petition Trump to pardon another woman who was convicted of, I believe it was a murder charge when she was really young, sort of like an abused girl. But the unfortunate part is that, you know, whenever there's celebrities behind it, it gets a lot more attraction and a lot more attention.
Kanye's like this with Trump, best buddy.
Make America great. But yeah, it's a really
interesting... Get to Sweden and Australia.
I'm trying. Gender equality, parental leave, all those things. Yeah. Healthcare.
Yeah, you're like in the corporate law industry and in the fitness industry, where, like, a lot of, like, there's a lot of propaganda into women's rights, right?
Yeah, definitely. There's, I don't know, I think sometimes the rhetoric outstrips the reality.
Yeah.
Some of us were talking about this yesterday, actually, and how, you know, with women in fitness, it's so much of it is still very sexualized. So, like, the girls on Instagram who get the most followers and the most endorsements and can make a career out of it are usually not just the best athletes.
Yeah.
If you catch my drift. But
yeah.
C'est la vie.
Yeah, for sure. Last question. This is the best one. If Ashley would have a theme song, what would it be? Like, this is the song that goes on in people's head when they think of you.
Bringing sexy back. Just kidding.
I was judging you there.
Oh, let's see.
It might be that. That's the first one that came in mind.
Man, now I'm, like, at a loss, and I'm totally, you know, I'll go with that one, because now I'm totally drawing blanks. So hopefully that's
You're welcome.
It. Thanks, yeah. Immortalized.
So where can people find you? Where can people follow you? Do you want new followers?
Sure. New followers are always great. I love meeting new people, and especially people all around the globe, so I can hang out with fellow travelers. I am on Instagram.
Smash.
Smash Be Fit is my handle.
That's an awesome Instagram name.
Well, in sports, I'm Ashley, so my nickname is always Smashley. People call me Smash. So my last name's Bowman, so Smash Be Fit, because I'm a nerd. That's probably the best way to reach me. If you are in need of legal assistance, you can search my law firm, Bird Morella. I'm on there too. Yeah, so that's probably the best way to do it.
Awesome. Thank you, Ashley.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. If you'd enjoyed the podcast today, take a screenshot of your phone, share it on social media, and leave us a 5-star rating with a comment below. It makes such a difference when everybody gets involved and shares the love. Thank you so much. Until next time.